Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan? Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Thank you. Representative Bowe?
Present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Edelson? Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott?
Here.
Representative Erdahl? Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, present.
Madam Chair, quorum is present.
Thank you. Up next on the agenda, we have approval of the March 16th, 2022 minutes. I see Representative Poston on my screen. I don't know if you've had a moment to review those minutes.
I have, Chair, and I would like to move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Poston. Members, if you could unmute, all in favor of Poston's motion to approve the minutes for March 16, 2022, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. The first bill today on the agenda is House File 951, and since that is my bill, I will pass the virtual gavel to Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. What an honor it is to fill in big shoes to fill, subbing in here, but I'm happy to do it. So, Chair Richardson, would you like to move House File 951 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
So moved.
All right, and Chair Richardson, I see you have an A1 amendment. Is the A1 amendment to get the bill in your desired form?
Yes, I'd like to move that A1 amendment as well.
All right, any discussion on the amendment, members? Seeing none, please unmute yourself. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Chair Richardson, go ahead and present your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 951 built upon bipartisan work that was done to ensure our preschoolers and early learners experiencing behavioral challenges were met with support before resorting to dismissal. Minnesota has a significant educational disparity issue. The data shows that Minnesota's educational outcomes and graduation disparities are among the worst in the nation for students of color. A contributing factor to these disparities is the unacceptable and troubling disparities based on race and disability in school discipline. To be clear, we'll never close our opportunity and achievement gap if students don't have an equal opportunity to be in our classrooms learning. When we hear statistics that were pulled together by the Minnesota Department of Human Rights and know that 55% of dismissals are based on subjective reasons, things like general disrespect versus objective reasons, things like assault or possessing a weapon, it shines a light for us to understand the discretion and subjectivity built into the system is leading to these troubling statistics that were highlighted by the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, including students with disabilities being twice as likely as their peers without disabilities to be expelled or suspended. Black students being 8 times more likely to be suspended or expelled than their white peers, and Indigenous students being 10 times more likely to be suspended or expelled than their white peers. There's no surprise that we see corresponding disparities in literacy and graduation rates. If our kids are not in the classroom at the same rate in grades K through third grade, they are at greater risk for not meeting developmental milestones, including those related to literacy. Behind the data are real stories of students impacted. Last year in this committee, we heard the stories of the young Black student that I believe was in the first grade, upset her teacher, confiscated her chapstick. Running from the room, she was suspended. Versus the older white male student who caused thousands of dollars of property damage in an outburst, repeatedly kicking in a door. He was given a timeout. In one NPR news story, they shared the story of a Black second grader who poked another student with a pencil. He was suspended. But when another one of his peers, also a second grader who happened to be white, threw a rock hitting another student and then proceeded to break his teacher's glasses, he was not suspended. He was given the opportunity to take on additional responsibilities to help pay for his teacher's glasses. We have a disturbing pattern where students with disabilities are receiving more punishments more often than students without disabilities. And Black and Indigenous students are receiving punishments more often and longer than their white counterparts. And the discretion of these choices is where the disparities breed and grow. Children who experience just one suspension are two times more likely to become involved with the criminal justice system. One suspension can change the entire trajectory for a child's life. Furthermore, children who are suspended or expelled are 10 times more likely to drop out of high school and experience academic failure. We know that behavior is communication, and at some point, all of our young learners are going to communicate to us that they need support. The point of this bill is to create a fairer discipline process and practice. This bill would prohibit the dismissal of a student in grades K through third grade unless non-exclusionary disciplinary measures have been exhausted and there's an ongoing serious safety threat to the child or others. As a note, dismissal would not prohibit removal from the classroom under Minnesota Statute 121A.61. The bill would also add an appropriation for grants to school districts and charter schools to provide training for school staff on non-exclusionary discipline practices. With that, Madam Chair, I have a number of testifiers, and I'll yield my time.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. And I did forget to mention that members will have a time certain vote on this bill at 1:40. And then before the testifiers begin, you will be limited to 2 minutes each to speak, and the clerk will be putting a 30-minute warning and the 2-minute time's up message in the chat, so you'll see that as you testify. With that, our first testifier is Professor Bernadea Johnson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dr. Bernadea Johnson, and I'm a board member of Solutions Not Suspensions, an assistant professor at Minnesota State University and former superintendent of the Minneapolis Public Schools. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with addressing the discipline disparities that create exclusionary environments for our students in pre-K through 12th grade. I knew as a superintendent I had to tackle this persistent issue because students who are not in school cannot learn. Students who are pushed out of school lack a sense of belonging, and students who don't learn how to do school cannot develop agency. Therefore, I started with our littlest learners by putting a moratorium on suspending students in pre-K through second grade for nonviolent behaviors. Our state has such grappling discipline disparities, as you've heard from our chair, for students of color and for students with disabilities. This happens when expectations are not clear, consequences don't match the behavior, and when consequences differ based on student demographic. How did I know this as a superintendent? With my academic leadership team, and I reviewed suspensions for every student to identify what we could do to identify needs and trends and behaviors to allocate resources and target professional development. I often share the examples of the kindergarten student that Chair Richardson shared with you, who didn't put away her chapstick, ran out of the room, and was suspended for being unsafe. Or the story of the middle school boys who both damaged property in the school. One child was suspended, the Black child was suspended, and the white child was given special compensation dispensation because his parents were going through a divorce. Exceptions for one kid and punishment for another. We must have clear and consistent expectations for our students, and more importantly, we must not socialize our children to believe that school is not a place for them. And we start with our littlest learners. We say, school is not for you. You can't develop the skills to stay in school to learn. When our youngest learners are struggling and doing things that don't meet expectations, it often is because their needs are not being met. We need to find ways to figure out what those unmet needs are. It could be that a sense of belonging, agency, or learning, and how to meet them. We owe it to our youngest learners to teach to keep them in school and not send them the message that from the earliest grades, the school is not for them. Thank you for listening and learning from my experience. You already have a statement from Solutions Not Suspensions, and I will leave my statement with the staff. Thank you again for your time, and I know you don't have time for questions, but you can email me at any time or follow up with any thoughts you have.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. And we will have some time for questions after all the testifiers have a chance. So please do stay on if we have questions for you.
Okay.
Our next testifier is Josh Croson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Hi, thank you so much, Madam Chair. My name is Josh Croson, Executive Director with Ed Allies, which is also a member of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. And I'm here in support of HF 951. At Ed Allies, we're dedicated to ensuring every kid has access to an excellent education so they can meet their full potential and thrive. We base our recommendations on sound research and concerns we hear from students, families, educators, and community leaders. Through years of research and achievement data, we can say with certainty that suspensions and expulsions do not work. For over more than 50 years, we've defaulted to suspensions and expulsions as the primary form of discipline. We know the practice well because it's really the only practice we've known. We've made suspensions and expulsions a one-size-fits-all approach to discipline. So I can understand how confirming the fact that they don't work would and should make us all a little bit uncomfortable. But now research tells us that suspensions and expulsions don't improve outcomes for children. In fact, suspensions and expulsions do massive unintentional harm, especially for our youngest learners, for both those who are being suspended and those who are left in the classroom witnessing their peers being suspended. As toddlers and young children attempt to navigate this world, they're prone to making mistakes along the way. In other words, they have a tendency to be kids. Long-term impacts of suspending and expelling toddlers and young children show that these kids are more likely to be suspended and expelled in later grades, engage in riskier behavior in the future, and enter the criminal justice system. The way we discipline babies now is not working to deter from unwanted behavior, but on the contrary, increases the chances of unwanted behavior. So in closing, I know I only have 30 seconds left. I'd like you all to consider an 8-year-old or younger kid in your own life. I've often hear from family or from people who say we should discipline our kids in schools the same way we discipline kids at home, ironically in support of more suspensions and expulsions. But would you ever kick out that young child in your own life out of your home just because they were disruptive or ban them from your home for biting their sister? You would likely have them apologize and show them the ways that they harmed somebody or yourself. And I only ask that you provide that same grace for all of Minnesota's kids. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Croson. Up next is Adil Abdul. And then after that, we'll move on to public testimony. And Miriam Adam is on deck. So go ahead, Ms. Abdul. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Hi there, everyone. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Adil Abdul. I am a Somali autism mom, and I often say I like to really retire. I'm tired of coming to the state legislature, even though it's Zoom now. I want to thank first Madam Chair Richardson for really just having a laser-like focus on this issue. It's really important, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify again. I thought about what I was going to say today, and I've decided to do it differently. I'm not going to tell you what happened to my son in Bloomington Public School District because you already know it. I'm not going to give you facts, data, and research because you know it 2 + 2 = 4. Plus, Josh is so much better at that than I am. Today, I want to appeal to your bottom line, to your wallet, to your purses. I know you're thinking, what? What the heck is that? What does that have to do with dismissal? Let me line it up for you. Imagine if you invested in Amazon, in Google, in Tesla, or Facebook when they first went public. If you knew back then what you know today, you would have bought shares in these stocks and you would all be reaping the benefits today. Investing in today's children is tomorrow's Amazon and Google stock. If we keep children in school and educate them, they will pay the Medicare and Social Security benefits we're all going to need tomorrow. Investing in kids today will only help and support you tomorrow when you need it. Now, let me play you what the other side will say. What if a first grader brings a woman? You know, if that's the case, then Houston, we got a big problem than just discipline. This bill also addresses if there is a serious safety threat to the student or others. Others might say, well, this is unfunded mandate. Actually, school districts are funded to teach and educate children. In other words, keeping kids in school is funded and mandated. Please do not get distracted and focus on what's important. Keeping children in the classroom and learning is really the best investment we can make. I thank you again for your time, and I really wish that, and I hope that we carry this bill to the finish line this year. Lunch on me if you guys do that.
Thank you, Ms. Abdul. We appreciate your continued advocacy. So our next testifier is now in the public testimony section. It's Miriam Adam, and on deck will be Adosh Uni. Ms. Adam, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Miriam Adam. I'm an educator. I've been teaching for 18 years. And as an educator, I've seen students be suspended without getting to the root cause of what the actual issue is. All teachers know that behavior is a symbol of something else that needs to be addressed. And that has been brought up already by previous speakers. Young children want to be good, to be praised, to be part of their community. And removing them from that safe space and community has detrimental, traumatic experiences that cannot be addressed as they get older and older. Not feeling safe anymore leads to the young students suspended to be disengaged, leading to not only social-emotional issues, but also to academic disengagement. And that itself is really traumatic for a student as young as that. Many of us know that students often have needs that won't be addressed with a simple suspension, especially at a very young age. From the perspective of parents, it is even more important. I've worked as a multilingual educator with our families, and I'm aware of the cultural differences that can come up in the classroom setting and behavior management that often can actually lead to behavioral situations that are misunderstood by the adults. In the student's culture, it might be okay to do one thing at home, but to do the same thing at school might not be okay. And so this is where parent and school engagement and relationship needs to be built and be mutual and authentic. The school should bridge that gap where the family should be informed, families should be brought in immediately, and being in partnership with family will yield to better results long-term than simply excluding our young ones from the classroom and from safe spaces that really mean a lot to them. Considering the pandemic and all the lost learning we talk about, adding this to it would only make the injury even worse. And so, again, I'm very grateful to have this opportunity as an educator. I've seen young ones leave the classroom for a minor infrastructure, like you just said. It could be a chapstick. It could be just not looking directly at the teacher. In some cultures, we do not do that because of respect of an adult. And so thank you for giving me this opportunity, and I'm really grateful to be part of this space. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Adam. Up next is Adosh Uni, and on deck is Kalia Pringle. Mr. Uni, welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you. Committee members, my name is Adosh Uni, and I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And I just like to add some words of support behind the powerful testimony that you've heard so far. So thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of HF 951, which prohibits the suspension of students in kindergarten through grade 3, building upon the existing prohibition on suspensions of pre-kindergarten students. Unfortunately, Minnesota ranks very poorly when it comes to racial disparities in many categories. We know that. Punitive discipline practices rely on the belief that exclusion, when used as a consequence, teaches a student to perceive as necessary to maintaining a safe, orderly learning environment. This belief leads to a significant underinvestment in proactive supports necessary to promote students' social emotional development and mental health and implement alternatives to suspension. The American Psychological Association Zero Tolerance Task Force found no systemic evidence that a suspension accomplishes these goals. Minnesota has some of the worst discipline disparities in the nation. Despite no correlation with improved student outcomes or school climate ratings, close to 20,000 K-12 students in Minnesota received one or more out-of-school suspensions during the 2018-19 school year. In the same year, there were 5,766 reported suspensions, expulsions, or exclusions for grades K-3. Here's just one example for the disparities. In the 2018-19 school year, 12.8% of all Minnesota kindergarten through grade 12 students identified as Black or African American. That's about 11.2%. In the same year, 44.2% of kindergarten expulsions or suspensions or exclusions were for Black or African American students. It was 46.3% for first grade, 50% for second grade, and 44.8% for third grade, according to our data. We know that there are unintended negative consequences for exclusionary discipline practices, such as suspension. Students who are suspended consistently hear messaging that they are not welcomed or valued in the school community. These students have diminished perceptions of school climate, are shown to have less positive relationships with staff and peers, and diminished levels of trust. Meanwhile, they are more likely to exhibit antisocial behavior, experience academic difficulty, drop out, receive an arrest, and experience incarceration. Students experience suspension and expulsion are even at increased risk for long-term physical and mental health issues. Madam Chair and committee members, we should be moving toward less reliance on suspension as a disciplinary tool and move toward the non-exclusionary discipline practices that keep the child in the educational setting, like the governor has proposed in addition to this proposal. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify in support of HF 951.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Up next is Kalia Pringle, and on deck is Tanya Drawn. Kalia Pringle, if you are here, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kalia Pringle. I am with the National Parents Union. I also sit on the Steering Committee for Solutions Not Suspensions, and I'm also a member of Dignity in Schools. I'm here to speak in support of House File 951, and I just want to echo the testifiers before me. I just want to say that discipline disparities are not happening because a child is Black, poor, can't learn, or from a single-parent home. They are directly related to the perceptions of a child's behavior by adults. Teachers refer Black children and white children differently for similar behaviors. White students are more likely to be referred for objective behavior, such as smoking, vandalism, leaving without permission, and obscene language. Black children are more likely to be referred for subjective behavior, school defiance, such as school defiance, disrespect, excessive noise, threat, and loitering, as well as attendance. We have policies in place that focus too much on assimilation to school culture rather than culturally affirming social emotional needs. One remedy is to ban K-3 suspensions, as well as having social emotional and mental health support that is not based on white social norms. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Our next testifier is Tanya Drawn, and on deck is Jennifer Davis. Ms. Drawn, please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Tanya Drawn. And I am a Minnesota delegate with the National Parent Union. I also sit on the steering committee with SNS and the executive director of Uplift Minnesota. But more important, I'm a mom of six, a grandmother of 14, and an auntie of too many. I can't even count on my fingers anymore. And I am in support of House File 951. And I just want to tell you a little story about myself. I have six children, and one of my children started getting disciplined as early as kindergarten because he was in the bathroom too long. He got suspended from school for a day. It did not teach him that school was a learning environment. And there was multiple suspensions from kindergarten all the way through second grade. It took him until third grade until he had a teacher that really found out that when he was bored, he would go into the bathroom and just sit there and wait for time to pass along. She gave him extra work to kind of keep him engaged, but that was one teacher out of very many other teachers that either disengaged or engaged him and suspended him and not suspended him, depending on his actions and inactions. Most of it was just walking out of the classroom and they didn't even know where he was. My child ended up dropping out of school and we're still dealing with the after effects of that. So I'm thinking about my child and what could have made the difference and what could have made him feel welcome. He started school at 5 years old, and I know I could have waited, but he was very intelligent. He even went to preschool, and I said, we shouldn't keep him there any longer. So we had him go into kindergarten at five, and I thought the environment was going to be very welcome, and he did not feel welcome in that environment. He did not feel welcomed by that white teacher that was there that did not understand that he was bored, and he just went to the bathroom to be alone. So with that, I want to imagine a world that could be a little different. What if we found and used ways that could have kept my son there in kindergarten? What if we would have been welcoming him to this environment instead of kicking him out
and having those effects attached to him for the rest of his life. It takes a village to raise a family. It takes a village to make sure our kids feel invested in. And I'm telling you, we need to make sure those schools are those environments in those villages. Like I said, I'm still dealing with the after effects of my son in this environment that never made him feel welcomed and trying to push him to go forward, even though now he's in his 20s. And he dropped out of school, and with six kids behind me and 14 grandkids, he is the one that I'm struggling with the most, even at this time. So I want you to take into effect how parents really feel about suspensions. Even I worked for the state for a amount of time, and his suspensions almost caused me to lose my job. It's the reason why I'm involved today. And I didn't think I was going to cry or do anything, but I'm going through so much with him right now that I look back over his life, and I remember these moments and moments of other kids that I know that got suspended and how they didn't feel welcomed at an early age and how they felt disengaged by a system that is supposed to respect them and support them the most. And I want you to really think about it. Think about what they face later on in life, because those statistics are true. And I want you to do something now. We can make the difference now. Thank you.
Ms. Dron, thank you so much. And I'm sorry that that happened to your son, and your advocacy matters. And we're really glad that you're here speaking to our committee today. Our next testifier is Jennifer Davis, and on deck is Kevion Ellis. Ms. Davis, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Hello to the committee. My name is Jennifer Davis, and I'm here as a family educator working with early childhood family education in St. Paul Public Schools. And I advocate with many organizations, and I speak today just on behalf of children. I am constantly shocked on how hard we have to fight to simply give children space to exist. Early childhood family education is normally the entry point into the school system for families of very young children. And I work bringing parents up to speed on the best brain science for developing and thriving children. And the information that I give them is often contrary to the examples that they see in the hallways. And it's really disappointing and dismaying and hard to reconcile with grown adults who are trying to learn how to take care of their own children. So as a gentle reminder, early childhood is the sensitive brain period development from prenatal to 8 years old, or approximately third grade. And as a child development rule of thumb, whether typical or atypical, if a child cannot read, there is no adult reasoning in the world that should result in that child being excluded, suspended, dismissed from the group or the schoolroom. The same rules applies when evaluating teachers in classrooms who tell children things like, you can't go to recess unless you do this and this and this. You can't go to recess unless you sit down over there. You can't go to recess unless you obey me, right? This is inconsistently applied. Its practice is exclusionary, reactive, threatening, and inconsistent. We know it affects children of different genders, races, and different abilities differently, and the children on the short end of the stick always get it hardest. To suspend any child when an authority figure excludes a child, it is really just detrimental to their brain development. It's a terrible teaching practice, according to any indicator of quality, and is deeply rooted in subjective ideas of respect and disrespect, completely discounting the power dynamics between licensed educators who are public employees held to ethical standards versus children who essentially have no human or citizens' rights. So I would just like to leave us with those thoughts. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and thank you for taking up this measure.
Thank you for being here, Ms. Davis. Our next testifier is Kevion Ellis, and on deck is Nancy Antoine. Mr. Ellis, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. Kevion Ellis with Education Minnesota. We'd like to thank Representative Richardson for bringing this bill forward, and we are happy to see the amended version of House File 951 that appropriates $5 million for staff training on non-exclusionary discipline practices. Education Minnesota supports strategies that address the disparity in suspension rates amongst racial groups through culturally responsive teaching and equitable disciplinary practices such as restorative justice, peer mediation, trauma-informed practices, and other research-based, culturally respectful strategies to create a productive classroom climate. We know that students of color and students with disabilities are disproportionately impacted by exclusionary interventions. Students can't learn if they're not in a classroom, and removing them does not address underlying reasons for their behavior. We support the current bill and believe that the language outlining that expulsions and exclusions may be used if there is an ongoing serious safety threat to the child or others would protect teachers and staff in severe situations. Again, we appreciate the training language and appropriation being added so that this legislation can be implemented correctly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ellis. And our next testifier is Nancy Antoine. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Nancy Antoine. I'm the principal at Bridgewater Elementary in Northfield. I'm also on the Board of School Administrators, and I'm also the 2021 National Distinguished Principal. And I've been a principal here for the last 15 years, and I am the only person of color, only licensed person of color on staff in my building. And it is my job to decide whether a student gets suspended or does not get suspended. And I tell you what, I use that extremely infrequently. Just giving you an example of when I would use that. For example, when I have a first grader who I walk into my level 2-3 EBD room and I see that the first grader is standing on top of a bookshelf, and everything in the room is out of the bookcases, off tables, off desks. He has thrown the teacher's computer on the floor. Again, I'm not concerned about that piece. He's also taken a book and thrown it at the teacher, breaking the teacher's glasses. And so the teacher is in there basically trying to play a game of tag that no one wins. And then the student proceeds to urinate on the floor and on an adult. That would be a case in which I would use a suspension. Number one, I'd use a suspension so that there is a break between the two, but also as a chance to plan for what we do when that child reenters the classroom, because we need to have a plan. It's very difficult when I do have to suspend a child. There is not a win there. At the same time, it's about having that time to plan for that child. What can we do when that child reenters the room? I've had other situations where my staff have been pummeled by students, and we're trying to find out what else can we do to intervene before we would get to that suspension level. And so I stand here today not as a proponent of suspensions, but as someone who wants to at least have that as a tool in my tool bag, not to misuse, not to overuse, but just another tool so that I can give space so that I can come up with a plan on how we keep that child there, because it's not about removing that child. It's about keeping them as long as possible and as much as possible, because I know they need to be with us. But at the same time, when I have a child who's doing these things, I cannot keep them and make a plan at the same time. So thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity today. I understand where you're coming from, and I also hope that you understand where I'm coming from and making sure that we have time to plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we're going to move on now to member questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, oh my goodness, I'm having some feedback here. Just give me a second here to check my volume.
Chair Richardson, you're unmuted. I don't know if it's coming through on yours too. We'll, the rest of us can make sure we're muted. Now go ahead and try it, Representative.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. I'm still getting feedback. Not sure what the problem is, but my question is, and my statement is for the chair. So, Representative Richardson, I appreciate your goal. And, you know, Representative Mohler, why don't I try to straighten out my problem and then I'll come back and ask my question. Okay.
That sounds good. And if you need to call in, feel free to call in so we can hear you better. And we'll move to Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I too would like to commend Representative Richardson for bringing this forward. Overall, I support limiting suspensions and expulsions. They should not be suspended without getting to the root cause. A race should not be a consideration in discipline. I agree that we should not have a racial disparity. But I do have a discipline situation that I clarified, and actually Ms. Antone pretty much got into what I wanted to mention. If violence is done to a teacher, and I've given this example before, I've done bills on this before, where a teacher was basically picked up by a second grader who was old for his grade, dropped on her head, and broke her neck. Now, in this type of situation, what should be done? What I proposed in my bill was not to suspend or to serve expulsion, but to remove from the class for 3 days to attempt to get to the root cause. Not to take them out of the school, not to take them away from other teachers, but just removing from that teacher and try to find out why did this happen, what can be done. Maybe 3 days isn't enough time to do it, but at least it's getting at the area that I think needs to be addressed. And I do appreciate the principal who just spoke for getting into that. So I guess my question is, in the situation that I described, Representative Richardson, what do we do with a child who has committed violence against a teacher? And do we just let them keep going to class? What do we do?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, for your questions. So under Minnesota Statute 121A.61, if there is indeed a situation where there is either an assault or if there is any sort of violent behavior, state statute requires that child would be removed from the classroom. To be clear, removal from the classroom is not considered a dismissal. So that under this bill, removal from the classroom would still stand as something that would be a requirement under current state statute. I would also just add that, in terms of the majority of suspensions that we are seeing within the state, the majority of the suspensions are not related to assault. They're not related to violence. I said at the beginning of my presentation that, looking at the data from the Department of Human Rights, 55% of those suspensions were related to things that were highly subjective, including things like general disrespect. And with that, what we are seeing is a consistency of where Black students, Indigenous students, and students with disabilities are being kept out of the classroom for longer periods of time and at a higher rate. And I appreciate that for each principal is going to be approaching this from their perspective. And I appreciate Ms. Antoine noting that her use of suspensions is very limited, but across the state, that's not what we're seeing. And as we look at the disparities that we see, Ms. Strawn talked about her son who was suspended, who dropped out of high school. That's the trajectory that we see when these kids are suspended just one time. They're more likely to come in contact with the criminal justice system. They're more likely to drop out of school. And so as we think about the supports, and knowing that behavior is communication, I really think that part of this is ensuring that schools and teachers have proactive tools in their toolbox before you get to this point. And so that is also part of the appropriation piece that would be discussed in ed policy or ed finance, rather.
Representative Erdahl, any follow-up?
Just real quick. I understand what Representative Richardson is saying. I did not mean to imply that I think it's a commonplace occurrence that students commit violence against staff or teachers. All I was saying is that in the rare instances that that happens, I want to see that student gets some support, some help, and not just punishment. And Chair Richardson then does say that the state statute would remove that child, but I still don't know if they're getting the help that I think that they need, and I would hope that there are measures in place to remedy that. So thank you.
Yep, Chair Richardson, any follow-up?
I would just say that I think that we have a goal of ensuring that all students are met with supports.
Representative Erickson, let's try it again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
It is much better. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, my comment and questions were for the chair. And, you know, so I wanted to say that, you know, these goals are really good. But having been in the classroom as many years as I was and worked with a variety of ages, teachers have to have tools. And, you know, those tools are what help us keep order in our classroom. And learning doesn't go on unless we have order. You know, we have school policies, we have district policies on discipline. Teachers have their policies, you know, and so in spite of the Minneapolis teachers striking, I still side with them when it comes to the classroom and agree with the principal who was speaking. You know, what would happen if she doesn't have something in the toolbox to deal with the incident that she described? She's going to be held almost hostage by this student, and that's not going to bring about learning. So my question for you, Madam Chair, is I know we're going to be moving forward with this bill, so I'll get a chance to discuss it again. But do you believe in consequences, you know, when rules or laws are broken?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. I believe in compassion and accountability for all of our students. And I also believe that as teachers, as schools, as principals, there shouldn't be a difference between that compassion and accountability. We shouldn't see that Black students are going to be disciplined one way and a white student another way for the same or similar behavior.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the real Madam Chair, you know, When I think about the achievement gap and I think about suspensions and expulsions, I come to the conclusion to a certain extent that because these children probably cannot read proficiently, write proficiently, compute their math problems, they have that frustration and they have to act out in some way. And that frustration can come out in a variety of ways. As the principal noted, I mean, that's an extreme situation, I'm sure. And, you know, I've never seen these kinds of behaviors in a classroom to the extent that was testified. But again, we have to make our goal to ensure that children can read and write and compute their math problems before they enter fourth grade. I think we have to focus on that and the discipline will be taken care of. I'm very sad to hear about disparities in discipline because we have in law cultural competency, and that is defined as the ability for the educator and the parent to interact on whether it's a racial issue, a language issue, or a social economic issue. So, you know, if we follow the law, if we follow what's in statute, you know, I think we could see some much better results, and I would like to see that play out, you know, before we change an entire statute that is not going to be applicable across the state, because I've never heard of this happening in my area or in any of central Minnesota where there has been an expulsion or a suspension of a child. And maybe, you know, maybe it's occurred and they just haven't told me. And I would guess that the principal from Northfield has probably had very few of these, maybe just this one. So I hope, as you know, you think about the future of this, that we weigh carefully, what effect does this have on the entire state? And to what extent do our teachers understand cultural competency? So that's not a violation. And, you know, are we going to make reading and writing and computing math problems proficiency our goal, our main goal, by the time our students are entering fourth grade? I think that's what I'll leave it at for now. But, I'm really concerned that if we take away this tool, we're going to cause more problems than we are solutions. So let's think about smart discipline instead of soft discipline, because children have to be raised within a structure. And school is one of those structures. And, you know, I have to say that in my, you know, 36 years of teaching, I think I sent one student out of my classroom. Oh, I was a high school teacher most of the time.
I have been
Representative Erickson, I'm sorry years, to sorry to cut you off.
Thank you.
We do have, we do need to move on to a vote soon, and two more people have raised their hands in the meantime. So, Chair Richardson, do you want to respond to that now or as part of your closing comments? Either way.
I will just say briefly that I share the goal of Representative Erickson to ensure our students are reading in time and they're meeting milestones related to math as well. And that won't happen if we don't address the fact that right now, today in this state, Black, Indigenous, and students with disabilities don't have an equal access to be in the classroom to actually meet those milestones and learn. And the data is there for people to see, and that data is across the state as well. And it's readily available through the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, that this is a statewide issue.
All right, thank you. And members, we are 5 minutes past our time certain for vote. Two more members did raise their hands. So very quickly, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask Representative Richardson a question, but maybe I'll just provide a comment seeing it's short here. Representative Richardson, I don't see anything dealing with race or anything else in your bill. And thank goodness, because the Democrats have been filling bills with racism through the last 2 years. And so I'm glad to see that it does not. So in your comments about this bill and the supposed problem we're trying to chase after here with this policy change, I don't see any connection to that and the rhetoric that you and others have brought forward on this. I am shocked by the testimony I heard from Ms. Antone. I didn't catch where she was from or which school district, but if we've got school district in our state where kids are up climbing on things and throwing the teacher's computer on the floor and they're not kicked out of class, I am shocked, as would 99% of Minnesotans, I assure you, be shocked that we have school districts that have those types of situations and those individual kids are allowed to stay in that classroom, causing chaos and disruption for the rest of the kids, for which people in our state expect there's going to be a classroom, as Representative Erickson mentioned, of order that provides for an environment where those kids can learn. I'll ask a question, Madam Chair. So, Representative Richardson, what about the rest of the kids in the class? When you've got the chaotic situation that Ms. Antone talked about, and I wonder how many teachers' computers have been damaged and how many of those we're paying for through this lax discipline policy that appears to be happening, at least in one place in Minnesota. But my question, Representative Richardson, is what about the rest of the kids? What about the ability for them to learn? And where does that balance with this radical approach that you're taking in this bill?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Drazkowski, you are mistaken. The law currently states under Minnesota Statute 121A.61, if there is a student that engages in an assault or violent behavior, they are to be removed from the classroom. So I want to be clear that what was just stated was incorrect. Minnesota state law requires that a child who engages in assault or violent behavior would be required to be removed from the classroom. So I want to get that set first. And secondly, the data is clear. Black students, Indigenous students, and students with disabilities are being kept out of the classroom for behaviors that white students and students without disabilities engage in. So what we are seeing is with the subjectivity of this, some students get supports, some students get kicked out of the classroom. This bill would even the playing field and would say that every child gets to have support first before they are suspended or expelled. And if there is a serious issue related to the health or safety of that child, or they are a risk to someone else, dismissal would still be allowed under this statute. So to be very clear, the things that people are being kicked out of the classroom for are not violent behaviors. The vast majority of suspensions within our states are related to things such as you talk too loud. You didn't look me in the eye when I told you to. Those are the types of things right now that Black, Indigenous, and students with disabilities are being excluded from our classroom now. And this is an equality issue, and we're not going to close our achievement gap if we allow this to continue. And what this means for our state is that we are going to be a less prosperous state if we continue to exclude our youngest learners from the classroom. The data is out there on that, as well as the cost to our state in Minnesota and nationally by not addressing school discipline disparities.
Representative Frazier.
Madam Chair, can I follow up, Madam
Chair? We need to move on, Representative Drazkowski. Your comment turned into a question and it went very long, but we're going to move on now to Representative Frazier. Oh, Representative Frazier, you're muted.
I will stand down. Chair Richardson explained much of what I would express. Thank you.
Chair Richardson, any final comments?
Just will ask for support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, members. With that, Chair Richardson renews her motion that House to refer House File 951 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Berg, aye.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes no.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Frazier votes aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
With 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Chair Richardson, I am turning the gavel back over to you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller, for your help with that. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 3402, a Representative Edelson bill. Representative Edelson, would you like to move House File 3402 be laid over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yes, that would be great. I thought we were going to be moving it to Education Finance, but that works. We can maybe just figure that out.
I can amend. Would you like to amend that motion to move it to Education Finance?
Madam Chair, I think that would be good because we are working on an amendment, and I think the amendment is going to have a fiscal implication.
All right. So moved. So Representative Edelson, it sounds like you got an A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like.
Actually, Madam Chair, I think we're not going to take that amendment. We're going to and just pick it up in Education Finance.
Sounds good. So then we'll move on to your explanation of the bill.
Madam Chair, I am going to keep it brief. I've got to go leave at 2 o'clock to go get my son. So this right now, currently in statute in 120B.026, we currently have encouraged to not exclude a student K through five from recess due to punishment. However, we do know it's happening. My son, particularly, who has a disability, was just 2 years ago. This happened to him. And I think I have some testifiers that can speak to this as well. It is happening. And as a clinical social worker, I can tell you recess is so critical for our young kids when they're spending an entire day at school. I don't think there's any academic, any teacher or student, school official that would say they don't want their kids to go out to recess. But we do. We want them outside. We want them moving. It's good for their academic, social, emotional, and physical health. And Madam Chair, in terms of time, I am going to go to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. And members, just a note that we'll have a vote at 2:15 on this bill. Moving on to the testifiers, welcome to the committee. Up first, for the authors testifier, we have Simon Hofer. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Simon Hofer, and I am 10 years old and in fourth grade. When I was younger, some of my teachers made me stay inside during recess when they thought I was misbehaving. I didn't like it. I don't remember what I did to that made them tell me to stay in, but I am autistic, so there is a pretty good chance it had something to do with my anxiety. I get anxious a lot in school, and sometimes I say things I shouldn't when I get stressed out. Sometimes I need to move my body when my teachers want me to sit still. In any case, I had to stay in for recess, and it didn't make me feel good. It just made me feel depressed, and it didn't help me behave the way my teachers wanted me to. I made a list of 6 reasons why recess and lunch should not be taken away from kids. Number 1, kids need to eat. They will get more grouchy when they don't. Number 2, kids need to exercise and get fresh air. Number 3, taking recess away almost never helps. Just makes things worse. Number 4, when we have to stay inside instead of playing outside, it usually just makes us more likely to make bad choices. Number 5, what if someone just has anxiety like me? Then it isn't so much their fault anyway. Number 6, I don't think teachers are trying to be mean, but making us stay inside doesn't help kids to do better. I would like most teachers to stop taking recess away from kids when they misbehave. Most of us are trying really hard to make good choices, but sometimes we just can't. Giving us punishments that make us harder, that make it harder for us to behave, just doesn't make any sense. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for joining us today. Up next, we have Gwen Anderson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I am Dr. Gwen Rocha Anderson. I'm a nationally board certified teacher and a teacher and administrator that's been working with K-16 schools for the last 20 years. I also wanted to note that it's really hard to follow Simon because it is for all of the Simons that I am here today, urging your support of House File 3402. As a school principal, I have colleagues currently, both teachers in my building and other colleagues across the state, that choose to hold with recess as a form of punishment for students with undesirable behaviors. As an educator for 20 years and as a parent for 11 years, it's against my philosophy of education. Students lose the ability to decompress their growing minds from the structured learning they've had all day and their focus on academics. They need this unstructured time to create and play to develop stronger brain capacity. They need the connection time with their peers to build relationships and ensure safer spaces for students with less bullying. They need that time to develop relationships with their teachers and other school staff. They need this behavior guidance that can be used as a teachable moment. We're in education to help students learn. I believe in this restorative approach to managing student behavior and using these moments when their behavior and emotional behavior needs more support. We need to use that as a way to learn from it and restore the harm that has been built to help them learn. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony as well. Moving on to public testimony. First up, we have Kulia Pringle. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kulia Pringle. I'm going to keep my testimony short. I just want to say that we support House, goodness, here it is, House File 3402 to ban recess as a discipline tool. I just want to say that when adults go to work, you know, they get 2 15-minute break and a 30-minute lunch. I just think it just makes sense that we should just expect that kids have that break from the school day. And it just is incomparable that it's used as a disciplinary tool. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Jennifer Davis. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you. My name is Jennifer Davis. I'm an early childhood and family educator in St. Paul Public Schools. And I also substitute teach in Minneapolis Public School District. And I'm here to testify on behalf of kids keeping recess and always getting access to unstructured playtime in order to let their brains develop. Dr. Gwen already spoke to it, so I don't need to elaborate, but please let children have recess all the time. It's not a good tool that teachers should be using in their toolbox. It's not an effective educating tool. It's doing exactly the opposite of what we think it's doing.
And we have all of the brain research to tell us that. So thank you for your time and for bringing this bill to the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. It looks like we have Roger Aronson next. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Association. You were supposed to hear from Jason Letzik today, who's the president of MESPA, and unfortunately, Principal Letzik is ill, which is kind of unusual for school principals taking a sick day, but he's not able to be with you today. But I would want to say that Principal Letzik has been instrumental in the discussion with the advocates that are interested in this bill. We've been having some discussions I would want to say at least 6-7 weeks. I had a very nice conversation with Representative Edelson yesterday. We're going to continue to work with Representative Edelson to see between here and finance if we can come up with some language that meets the needs of all of the folks, particularly Simon. We want to make this work out. And Representative Edelson has some very good ideas about how to do that. And I think that everyone that's worked with the elementary principal staff on these issues, I felt pretty good about it. So let's see where we're at. And we do like, in particular, the training money that we're talking about in this as well. So we'll look forward to working with this as it moves towards the Finance Committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Before we move on to member questions, I'll just note that Maren Holden with the Disability Law Center is also standing by for questions as well. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And our question is for the author of the bill, Representative Edelson. Representative Edelson, what would you expect the teacher to do in situations like this? I know my grandson has had to stay in and miss recess because he misbehaved. He got over it. What is your plan for helping a teacher to deal with this? I think an autistic student is far different from another child who doesn't have those kinds of issues. So, I certainly want to see that looked at very carefully. And I trust our teachers, and I really trust our principals, really, to make decisions as well that are good for all of our children. But Representative Edelson, what would you expect the teacher to do?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, are you familiar with dysregulation of the brain, of what happens when the brain becomes dysregulated? Representative Erickson.
Well, of course.
It becomes flooded with cortisol, right?
Representative Erickson and Edelson, this is an interesting back and forth here.
I think the obvious answer is yes.
Madam Chair, what I'm trying to say is when a child becomes dysregulated, the last thing to do is just to keep them sitting in a spot and then you thinking that they're going to punitively learn something from that. I think what I'm trying to display here is that that doesn't help. I've worked in a day treatment facility with young kids that were dysregulated, and what you're speaking of does not help. And also, it is like we're also assuming that every single instance where a child is held inside because of recess is that they are misbehaving in a behavioral way. My son, for instance, when he was held in, and I imagine Simon too, is because he couldn't do a math assignment. And my son has an IEP. What about him? Should he have stayed in the entire time? I think we need to have this discussion, but I'm happy to talk with you offline. I don't think it's being only used with behavioral issues. I think it's easy to go to that though, but it's not always true. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Edelson, would you prefer that the child write 100 times on the screen, the mobile screen that they have in their room or on their iPad, that I shall not do whatever it is, because that was the old fashioned way to do it was, the blackboard. When I was in elementary, I had to write on the blackboard 100 times that I will not whatever. Don't you think that affected my brain?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Speaker, I think that was an archaic way too, but so is also having kids staying because of recess. I think the times need to change, and that's what this bill does. So I hope you support it, Representative Erickson.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will ask further questions in finance.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not a question. It's just speaking up in support of this bill. I think Dr. Anderson did a brilliant job of explaining why it's so important that our children do get this time to unplug. I think there's more than enough research about how children react to the opportunity to be creative and to relax. And as we've heard so many heartbreaking stories over the last several weeks that we've been holding this committee of bullying, and other mental health issues that our children are facing. We've poured a lot of energy and are hoping to pour resources into improving our children's mental health. This is one really critical way that costs nothing to make sure that our children are forming relationships and that they give themselves time to be creative and sort of cultivate other skills that result in a healthy social emotional well-being. And I just want to thank the author for bringing this forward. She is an expert when it comes to dealing with children with some unusual barriers and the perfect person to advocate for this. I'm so grateful for her leadership. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is, I guess it's a comment slash question, I suppose. The discussion that I'm hearing, and I'm agreeing with many of the things that are being heard about how we need to have objective reasons for sending students out of the classroom. We need to have, we need to be doing things that will address root causes and help our students to learn. I was a teacher for 20 years, almost 20 years. And just like Representative Erickson, I can count on one hand how many students I sent out of my classroom. So my question is this, how are we training our teachers? If you have so many examples of students being sent out of the classroom for non-objective behaviors or for what we're seeing for recess here, but in my classroom, I mean, we didn't just sit in a class sitting silently. We got up and moved around and were interacting with each other and having discussions and all those things, except for when I was teaching in COVID and I wasn't allowed to do that. How are we training our teachers? So I don't know who that question would be answered to, maybe the author of the bill, but maybe some of these resources should be sent to how we're training our teachers so that we aren't seeing some of these examples instead of having a blanket change of policy that might be necessary if we are seeing students who are being violent during recess and keeping them in from recess would be appropriate. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Edelson.
Madam Speaker, I Heather, Representative Mueller, I think that's a great point. I will look at higher education and see what they're doing. It doesn't deter from the fact that we have to address what we're seeing currently right now in our schools.
And not seeing any further hands, Representative Edelson, any closing comments on your bill?
I ask for your support.
Representative Edelson renews the motion to refer House File 3402 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe,
no.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Waslowick?
Waslowick, aye.
Representative Drazkowski? Madam Chair, there are 12 ayes, 6 nays, and 1 absent vote.
With a vote of 12 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 1362, Representative Freiberg bill. I move that House File 1362 be laid over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill. And we will have a time certain vote on this bill at 2:30 p.m. Representative Freiberg, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. Parents with disabilities often need accommodations to participate in the IEP process when they have children who also have disabilities. One of my children had an IEP and now has a 504 plan, so I can speak from experience how complicated that process can be. Currently, there's no uniform policy or procedure for parents and school districts to follow. The lack of policy on this leads to inequity and impairs student education. This bill was initially brought by the Autism Society of Minnesota. However, multiple other communities have come forward echoing some of the same concerns. Accommodations are often simple changes such as electronic communication, paperwork being provided prior to meetings, accessible spaces, or interpreters for ASL. So just to summarize the bill, it would create a process for parents to request accommodations from the IEP team to be able to participate fully in the IEP process. The process outlines when a parent is informed of the process, how information is protected, who a parent can ask for accommodations, and the timeline for implementing requests. The bill does not address noncompliance, but rather creates a process so that other entities that enforce disability rights have a framework to determine if access was denied. When we were drafting the bill, we met with representatives of the school boards. We made some changes to address some of the concerns that they raised. I don't know their exact position on the bill as it stands, but we're happy to work with stakeholders as this bill moves forward. In your packets, there's a support letter from the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, and I would like to turn it over to the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Welcome to the testifiers, and just a note that the CA will keep time in the chat. You will have a 30-second notification and also a notification when your time is up. Up first on the list, we have Jillian Nelson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Richardson and committee members. I am Jillian Nelson, the Community Resource and Policy Advocate for the Autism Society of Minnesota. I'm before you today asking for support for House File 1362. Special education is a federally guaranteed right that children with disabilities have. However, in the case of children with disabilities that have parents with disabilities, that right is often compromised due to lack of accessibility for their parents. While reasonable accommodations in all public arenas is a protection that is offered by the Americans with Disabilities Act, it is often overlooked when parents request accommodations in the IEP process. As a disability advocacy organization, we hear these stories weekly. And unfortunately, we can't offer a lot of support or recommendations because currently in Minnesota, there is no policy or procedure for parents to access accommodations. Most often, the accommodations I hear parents are asking for are simple. Communication by email, receive documents 24 hours before a meeting, ASL interpreters, sensory-friendly meeting space. Yet over and over, families are being denied these simple supports or being provided them inconsistently. When a parent is denied accommodations, they are referred to MDE to file a complaint. MDE will tell them they aren't able to do anything and to contact the Human Rights Division. They will investigate and then tell families that because there is no proof they follow the policy and procedure, there is no wrongdoing. How can a family follow a policy and procedure that does not currently exist? House File 1362 would create that policy and procedure for disabled parents to request accommodations in the IEP process. It outlines notification of rights, information guidelines, how to request accommodation, and a timeline for response and places the IEP timeline on the hold while that response is being made. This does not place an undue hardship on teachers or administrators. And to be frank, it is simply requiring that schools do the right thing to support parents with disabilities who are trying to do the right thing in participating in their child's IEP meeting. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for your support of House File 1362.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Jules Edwards. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you. I'm Jules Edwards. I am the Executive Director of Minnesota Autistic Alliance, and I am an autistic parent of three disabled Afro-Indigenous children who are age ranges 8 to 18, all of whom have been pushed out of public education due to their disabilities and racial discrimination, each of whom qualified for an IEP. And it was very difficult for me as their parent because I needed some very simple accommodations in the IEP process, including email instead of paper mail, because my executive functioning issues result in me being unable to keep track of mail and I cannot mail things back. Another one is during meetings, we needed to take turns in conversation. Things like I speak and then you speak. Those are normal conversational things. But if somebody interrupted me, I would lose my train of thought entirely. And that was a problem for my disability. I was in a meeting one time and I tried to bring up concerns about racial and disability discrimination. And I talked about the school to prison pipeline that my son was being pushed down. And the assistant principal shouted and interrupted me, nope, 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 and then stormed out of the room. And then he came back and I wasn't able to complete my thoughts because of that disruption. I went to an IEP meeting one time that was scheduled for the exact time that the high school let out. And it was sensory overwhelm for me. So when I walked into the building, I didn't know where I was going. I was overwhelmed and I had to find a classroom to cry in because of my sensory overwhelm, which caused me to be dysregulated at the beginning of the IEP meeting, which disrupted the entire IEP meeting and we weren't able to come to a resolution. And there's nothing I can do. There is no recourse. There is no way that I can request reasonable accommodations. There's no process by which I can say my rights as a parent with a disability were violated. And if we understand that our students need reasonable accommodations, then we can understand that parents may need the same thing. Thank you. Please support this bill.
Thank you for your testimony and being willing to come and share a piece of your story with us today. Moving on to member questions, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is to the bill's author. And let me get back to the bill and give you the page and line. So on 2.10 and following, there's a reference there to the parent's request for accommodation must be treated as private data according to section 13.32. That is all new language. And so I'm wondering if the author has a plan that this should go to the Judiciary Civil on Data Practices Committee.
Representative Freiberg.
I don't have a plan, but I can certainly reach out to Chair Becker Finn and see if she would like to hear this bill.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that would be the right thing to do since this is new language. It'd be different if it was existing language, but it is new language and it has a reference there to Chapter 13. So it should rightfully come to the Judiciary Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Freiberg, would you like us to amend our motion?
The motion was just to lay the bill over, correct?
Yeah, for possible inclusion.
I guess I would defer to your judgment. I mean, I could check with Chair Becker Finn to see if she believes it should be heard in Judiciary, and if she does, maybe it would be appropriate to make a floor motion at that point. I don't know that in the event it doesn't need to go there. I guess I don't want to send it to a committee that it doesn't need in that case. But does that sound like a plan?
That does, Representative Freiberg. And I don't see any other member questions, so I will let you have last words on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for hearing this bill. It raises a really important issue. There's a huge recognition about the needs of children with disabilities, and there's a justified attention to that. But sometimes I think the whole issue of the the parents' involvement and the possibility that the parents may have a disability themselves gets overlooked. So I think this is addressing a really important issue, and appreciate the committee's consideration.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Seeing no further questions, I will lay House File 1362 over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 4039, Representative Dabney Bill. I move House File 4039 be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Members will have a time certain vote on this bill at 2:40 p.m. Chair Dabney, to your bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for this opportunity to present House File 4039 to you relating to the Office of School Trust Lands. We, the legislature, created the office in 2012, and in 2020, the legislative auditor did a special review and came forward with several recommendations. Those are an aspect of this report, as well as some other reforms to the office. It incorporates those recommendations, provides some greater clarity on the requirements of the director, more transparency in the director's duties, more uniformity with other executive branch appointees, and provides the office with greater flexibility in managing itself. With me today is Office of School Trust Lands Director Aaron Vandalindi, and I'd ask that you recognize the director.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Aaron Vandalindi, I hope I'm getting that correct. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Aaron Vandalin, School Trust Lands Director. It does look like Vandalindi, but it's pronounced as Vandalind. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on House File 4039. This is a bipartisan effort from the Legislative Permanent School Fund Commission. Madam Chair, we've worked on aspects of this bill since 2018. The bill that is before you today, House File 4039, has some revisions in it based on that Office of Legislative Auditor report from 2020. As Chair Dabney said, and I would be remiss if I did not thank him for authoring this bill and bringing it forward this session. So much appreciated. The Legislative Audit Report had a number of recommendations. Four of those recommendations were directed at the Office of School Trust Lands. A number of the recommendations were directed at the legislature or in probably more to the point, the Legislative Permanent School Fund Commission. And a number of the recommendations were for the Department of Natural Resources. The four recommendations for the Office of School Trust Lands, two of them we were able to handle internally with changes in our policies and procedures, and policies and procedures on how we worked and collaborated with the Department of Natural Resources. The other two provisions that needed legislative changes, and those were with respect to the school trust lands duties with regard to condemnation proceedings involving school trust lands and internal land exchanges involving school trust lands. The recommendation from the auditor's office was that we needed to clarify whether or not the school trust lands director needed to or was required to serve in a temporary trustee's role in those situations. So we've clarified that in in lines 2.6 or 2.16 and through 2.19, I believe. The other recommendation that needed to be corrected in statute is found later on in the bill, and that's with regard to the director's responsibility to evaluate and initiate real estate development programs or projects on school trust lands in the state. We've modified that language so that it's clear that we do the evaluation in the initiation of any of those types of projects in conjunction with the Department of Natural Resources and the Bipartisan Legislative Permanent School Fund Commission. The other pieces of the bill really are I would submit to you is just a reorganization of our statute. I had the director's role had statutory authorities in a number of different statutes, and we've combined all of those into 127A353, and also really, I believe, made it more clear of what our duties are to the different branches. So I have duties to both the executive branch and the legislative branch, so we've separated those out. And I would say the last thing that this bill does make a change in is the director's ability to hire and retain staff. And the previous or the existing legislation or the existing statute allows the director to hire up to 5 staff, and they have to serve in unclassified service. From what I've been told from the human resources departments is that unclassified staff can only serve in 5-year terms, and that's the limit on those terms. I have a very small staff in our office. There are 2.5 FTEs, including myself. And they are running up against those 5-year term limits. And I would prefer to have the consistency in the office that we've developed over the last 7 years. And that's what this language would do, would be to take them out of unclassified service. And it would not limit the director's ability to hire only 5 staff. I would say I run a very lean ship in the school trust office with 2.5 employees, including myself, and we frequently do not use all of the appropriation for staff, and I would continue on that that path. And with that, Madam Chair, I would again thank you for hearing the bill, ask for your support, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm not seeing any member questions at this point. So, Chair Dabney, your last comments on the bill.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to present today. Thank you to the director for walking us through the bill and giving some background context. I ask for member support.
I renew the motion to refer House File 4039 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan? Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drozdowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler? Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler? Madam Chair, there are 18 ayes and 1 absent vote.
With 18 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to make a motion to move House File 1362 to be back before the committee again. I think that Representative Scott raised a good point about Judiciary Committee. And I have spoken with Chair Victor Finn, who agrees that that bill should come to her committee. And so my first motion would be to move House File 1362 to be before the committee again.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Members, this will be a voice vote, so if you could please unmute yourself. Those in favor of bringing House File 1362 back before the committee, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion passes. With the bill back before us, I will now move House File 1362 be referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law. The clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bo?
Bo votes aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Madam Chair, there are 19 ayes and zero nays.
Thank you. With a vote of 19 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law. And thank you, Representative Scott, for lifting that up. It pays to have the lead of judiciary on your committee. Members, up next, we have a training presentation on Ripple. we'll hear a little bit about the Ripple training, and we'll have some brief time for questions. But I want to just take a moment to thank Representative Poston for bringing this issue up for us to have some time in committee to discuss. And Representative Poston, I'll maybe yield the floor to you for a little bit if you wanted to help open us up today.
Thank you very much, Chair. We really do appreciate this time. School safety is a really important issue. And typically when people talk about school safety, they talk about police and resource officers and school hardening and things like that. And sometimes that might be necessary. But I met Mr. Rudrud several years ago, and he's come up with a program that's called the Ripple Message. And it's all about creating relationships, creating trust, and creating awareness. So with students and with teachers, faculty, if you will. And I've seen the results of it up in my neck of the woods. I think it really is working well. It helps people identify warning signs and stop bad things from happening before they happen. So with that, I'd like to let Ben talk about it, and then he does have a short video to show as well.
Thank you, Representative Poston. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rudrud. Is it Rudrud? Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. Madam Chair, thank you. Committee members, thank you for giving me your time today to visit with you. Mr. Poston, thank you so much for introducing me. I created the Ripple Message nearly 4.5 years ago, and I did it because my background is actually in law enforcement. I worked actively in law enforcement for nearly 13 years. And while doing so, I started studying a lot of the violence that unfortunately has happened throughout our school districts in our country. And the more I learned, the more something stirred in my heart that maybe we were missing the boat little bit. So I sat down with my wife and I said, I'm going to leave my job in law enforcement. I have a new message that I have to share, and it's called Ripple. And what it does is it focuses on possibly preventing violence and really difficult things that sometimes are tough to talk about, like suicide, bullying, hurt, depression, a lot of the problems that exist in schools. I believe we can do more at preventing these really difficult things by really building positive relationships first. So what I did is I created a message with a wonderful team that delivers staff development messages and training to all educational workers inside the school, all teachers, administrators, wonderful people that cook lunches, custodial workers, bus drivers, everybody with access to students. And that message focuses on learning the behavioral characteristics and societal factors that we know exist that could possibly lead to violence, encouraging them to have a mental toolkit to hopefully start conversations earlier, catching some of this stuff before it happens. Then I identified that I needed to create an assembly message that's engaging, powerful, fun, and certainly impactful to deliver to students, where I focus on getting the students to understand how important their relationships with each other really are and how they need to focus on making sure that, for example, students are included. We're not isolating each other, and we're really doing more and stepping up so we can all make our school even more awesome than it is. The message is called RIPPLE. It stands for Relational Impactful Preventative Leadership. And if you would allow me a few minutes, Mr. Carl, I believe, is on the call. He's going to just start a video to show you, in this particular video, a couple minutes, shows you the student assembly side to set the stage for what you can see with what RIPPLE does for kids. So,
please proceed.
I think Carl is on the call. There it goes.
So guys, here we are. I hope you guys are ready because we're going to go into a gymnasium with 900 to 1,000 fourth and fifth graders today in assembly, and it's going to be amazing. Can't wait for you to see it.
Student assembly, and my class just loved it, and it was so fun, and it was what we needed, and so I highly recommend it. It's amazing.
Great. It hit home for a lot of them. It kind of reminded us why we do what we do.
Everyone was buying into the fact that we're not loners, we're not individuals, we're part of a group, we're part of the pack. We need to look out for each other, we need to reach out, help each other.
Just finished the RIPPLE training, and I'll tell you what, it's exciting. And it works. Get after it.
I'm challenging you to step up, and I'm also challenging you right now to understand how much every single one of you matter. Every single one of you matter. And you matter just as much as the person next to you. And the things that you're gonna do and accomplish in life, you have no idea how you'll be able to impact others, how you'll be able to spread kindness, how you'll be able to achieve whatever it is you dream of. But it starts with remembering that you matter. You matter to me. You matter to the adults in this building, the staff members. And they've just invited me here today to tell you. Can step up and be a champion for someone else by building a positive relationship, and maybe it just starts with one simple act of kindness. I believe it. Be a champion. Do your very best right now. Step up today. Someone needs you to step up.
RIPPLE training, it has transformed our school district. Teachers have always been great here, but they have now been given more tools to have stronger relationships with kids that go beyond just the classroom. And I'm seeing kids totally transformed as well. They're realizing that they can be heroes for each other. They can come up to teachers and talk to those teachers. I think before RIPPLE, teachers were teachers, but now students know that teachers are their champions. Teachers care about them and love them. And it's just made such a difference in our district.
All right, guys, one more school, let's go.
attendance to improve, you want enrollment to increase, you want your overall climate in your school to improve, it's all about relationships.
I created Ripple only to help educators be truly more awesome than they are. I think educators need all of our support. I think if we put positive relationships in every conversation where we're talking about safety, I think we're really doing a positive. I want you to know that it's not a curriculum. It's not another thing that we add to educators' plates. I believe they got so much going on already. Instead, it's a message that can only help them start earlier conversations to prevent some really bad stuff, learn some things that some factors that are always in place to start that conversation. And it gives students some challenges to truly step up how they treat each other in a powerful, impactful way. I've seen some amazing results from it in districts that I've shared the message with. And I can't thank you enough for hearing it. And only want to encourage you to continue talking about positive relationships anytime you talk about safety. And with that, I would yield back to Mr. Representative Poston.
Representative Poston. Representative Poston, you're muted.
Sorry, you'd think I'd have the hang of that by now, but sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. Rudrud. Chair, I don't know if there are some questions for Ben.
I'm not seeing any hands now, but I do have a question. I'm curious with, you talk about the fact that you've been doing this across the state. Like, what communities have you been working in across the state?
Well, several communities. I'm from central Minnesota. So I've worked with Bemidji's one I've worked with. I've worked with my hometown of Bertha. I just spoke in New York Mills this week. I just started conversations with Forest Lake School District this last week that's looking at trying to calendar some events. So, and I've spoken in other states too. So I'm working in Wisconsin, some districts in Iowa. I had the wonderful privilege to introduce and speak at the National Superintendents Conference in a session in San Diego. I created it really on a grassroots effort. And I'm just excited to continue to share the message and continue building a team where we can share some of the resources with schools and the different things that they can use as a toolkit just to help them. Great question. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Rudrud, for coming here with the presentation. I may have asked you this question, public safety, when we saw you, so forgive me if I'm asking it again, but I think it'd be helpful, members. You said you've been doing this for about 4 years now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you, with any of the schools or districts that you've worked with, is there any follow-up evaluations or surveys to kind of see what the environment or climate was like prior to you coming in with Ripple and then afterwards to kind of gauge what the success has been?
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, thank you for your question. So what we do in the beginning is we try not to tell a school what they have to do. We give them an idea of things that they can pick and choose from. And one of them is we really like them to survey their students and their staff in the beginning. For example, the question that means a lot to me is when you survey your kids and you ask your students, how many students actually believe they have a true, positive, trusted, caring adult in the school that they know believes them and loves them? And it saddens me that a lot of times one in five students will say they don't think they have that. So I encourage school districts to use a survey similar to that. They can use ours or they can create one and then ask them down the road after they've been doing some more positive relationship building strategies or tools, because I want to see that go down. One thing that's really important in the Ripple message is getting students to understand what it means to be a Ripple champion and a Ripple power or a power of one. And that is, my goal is to make sure every student in every school knows that they have so many adults in the building that are there for them, love them, encourage them, are giving them everything they can, but they're there every day to talk to in times of need too. So yes, there are some surveys, some follow-up survey information, and then there's ongoing staff development to whatever level a school decides to go to. Great question.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have.
Thank you.
So that brings up one other question for me as well. I'm curious whether there is work to move this to like a scientifically validated or an evidence-based practice.
Yeah. So I'm in the process right now of trying to gather as much information I can and obviously take that to the next step to show, you know, some positives from it. Yes, that's definitely my goal.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any other hands. Any last words, Representative Poston?
I would just like to say thank you, Mr. Rudrud, for being with us today. I do think that relationship building and trust building and awareness building does make a difference. Yeah. I think this is a really powerful message, and I think Mr. Rudrud is making a big difference. I appreciate you, buddy. Thank you for all that you're doing. And Chair, thank you for giving us this time. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Poston, for bringing this forward. It's definitely something that I'm hoping to be able to find out more about and hope to hear more as you're moving on kind of the pathway to next steps in terms of potentially getting to an evidence-based practice as well. With that, just a reminder, we will be hearing a few bills next week, and we will also have a walkthrough of our policy omnibus bill next week on Wednesday as well. And just a reminder, we do have a meeting Friday, March 25th, and that will be a 1 to 3 p.m. meeting, as it is not a typical one for our schedule. And with that, there being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.